Oh, the dulcet tones of Christopher Cross, and we're going to have some Christopher Kane talking to Christopher Culver, maybe about Christopher Columbus. Welcome back to the Chris Christopherson Hour. It is SailSportTalk.com. Karen Lyle, my co-host, as always. How you doing, kiddo?
Well, you know, I'm wondering if you and I should change our name to Christopher.
No.
Just to add to the confusion, right?
That is my brother's name, so it was close. Yes, Christopher Kane in studio on Twitch. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, but I don't understand how you can have a conversation about Red Sox fans versus Yankee fans and not bring up Philadelphia fans.
Well, Philadelphia Phillies fans aren't as bad, but yes, the old booing of Santa Claus.
So they allowed fans into the Eagles game, and they had them like 10 rows apart, still got into a fight.
Well, baseball-wise, because the A's aren't in the American League, I was kind of thinking about those Sox and Yankee fans that come to the Coliseum. Very rare to get the interleague Phillies in. But, Christopher, I understand we're about to hear an interview that you did do with the New York Yacht Club Commodore. Is that not right?
That is correct. With Karen as well, yes. And he had some great insights about the America's Cup, which is going to lead us into some fabulous conversations about things that are going down this week.
All right. Without further ado, let's listen to Karen and Christopher speak with Christopher Culver.
This is Karen Lyle here with Christopher Kane, and this is A Cup of Kane with Scotch. We are talking about America's Cup, and we have the Commodore of the New York Yacht Club on the line. Christopher Culver, welcome.
Thank you, Karen. That's great to be with you.
An exciting week in the America's Cup world. All four syndicates are finally back down in New Zealand. We have some of the boats coming down, the second boats, and it seems like we're going to start seeing some real sailing between the syndicates. But I'm going to kind of flash back to Newport and the New York Yacht Club days. I kind of miss the old days where you used to dismiss defenders.
Yeah, well, I think there are a lot of people that may say that. But, I'll tell you, what we have going on now in this cup and our focus to go to New Zealand, to be competitive, to get down there and try to win the cup and bring it back to the New York Yacht Club, it's an exciting time. And when you think about what we've all gone through during this year, as we try to layer America's Cup into this pandemic environment and make that work in as safe environment as we possibly can, it's an exciting time to be at the New York Yacht Club and part of this challenge.
And what's great about it this year, too, is, you know, to your point, we as a country have something to root for. Is if you can tell our listeners a little bit quickly just how the nationality rules have changed. So, you know, we're actually rooting for Americans this time.
Well, that's, you know, one of the, as we think about, you know, the some of the finest America's Cups, you know, and I think back, you know, prior to 1983 and the all-amateur teams and the national teams, that's a special moment in time over those decades, multiple decades, when you're rooting for your home country. That's something that, you know, we'd like to see going forward to foster that growth in nationality, get more challengers from different yacht clubs in different countries to participate. And that's going to be a real focus as we go forward.
We now have a new design on the water for American Magic Team. I bet you would love to be in New Zealand right now and see that.
Oh, I was fortunate enough. We were able to see it during the build process in Bristol, Rhode Island, where it was built, and saw, you know, once it was completed before it was flown to Auckland. But, you know, we're very proud of Boat One and the progress we've made and what's been done to Boat Two, Patriot. Defiant was terrific, you know, and we built the Mule first, we built Defiant, and now we're on Boat Two, which is Patriot. And we're excited to have it in New Zealand. The team is thrilled to be there. They're excited to get Patriot sailing, and it's going to be a terrific, terrific event.
And I do want to ask about that because I know Defiant was just, you know, declassified, and it's sort of a weird twist this year. The syndicates cannot have multiple boats on the water at the same time. So Defiant has to be retired. Patriot takes over. How do you go around bringing Patriot up to race speed when she doesn't have a sparring partner?
Well, a lot obviously is done in modeling, but there's nothing like, of course, to be on the water. It's this year, especially in the COVID environment, it was a shame that we were not able to line up in Cagliari or Portsmouth. Everybody was looking forward to lining up. But, you know, you sail the cards you're dealt. And, you know, the team, all the teams are looking forward to getting on the water. You know, it's going to be an exciting time to see them see the challengers line up, certainly in December for the Christmas Cup, and then we launch the Prada Cup in January. So that's going to be an exciting time for all.
And the Christmas Cup is going to be interesting because that'll be the first time we actually see these boats at war with each other. And as the second boats are coming off the Antonov Russian airplane and are getting unwrapped, are there, obviously there's a lot of I wouldn't say a lot, but there's definitely design differences since this is the first time we've ever seen these boats in the water. Are there things you're seeing in other boats that are surprising or curious or making you wonder what they were thinking? I know especially the noses of these boats are pretty different.
Well, I guess I'd answer that by saying, you know, if you're not always curious, you know, you're not looking over your shoulder enough sometimes, but yeah, we all want to know who's done it right, who gained an advantage. I think that you're left with some creative design enough to certainly go your own way and take advantage of areas in the boat and in the design that you're able to take advantage of. And very interesting to see, you know, boat one and the progression to boat two for a lot of the teams, obviously.
Well, thank you so much, Commodore Culver, for coming and talking to us about America's Cup. We certainly hope that you have the opportunity to realize your dream of taking that cup back.
Well, thanks, Karen and Christopher. It's we're so grateful to be in New Zealand, in Auckland, challenging for this. We certainly are the underdogs against the New Zealand team. But they've been gracious hosts. We look forward to competing there and seeing everybody that we can see in New Zealand when we're able.
Well, thank you so much. This is Karen Lyle and Christopher King, Sails for a Talk.
Thank you, Commodore.
Great.
We really appreciate
thanks,
it.
Karen. Thanks, Christopher.
All right, so there it is, and it leads the question, as I was listening to that, Christopher, when he said, obviously we are underdogs. Is that merely because they are challenging the champions or because of some other technical or tactical issue?
Well, I think you have this is a brand-new syndicate, right? So they haven't raced in the last couple America's Cup, and you've got continuing syndicates in New Zealand, the Italian and the British syndicate as well, which is if you look at the challengers, you probably would pick as the top dog right now. So I think that's what he's talking about, is they're having to start a new syndicate, started from zero without, you know, team left over, shore technicians left over, engineers, sail designers from before. He's sort of right. But let's be honest, that the New York Yacht Club does not get into things to lose. So it's what was fascinating to me listening to that. And for our listeners, that was done about 3 weeks ago. And what's fascinating now was part of that conversation was the design differences on the Gen 1 boats. And since we have spoken with him, the Gen 2 boats have been splashed in. Oh, my God, there is definitely some differences of opinion on what these boats should look like and how they should be built.
You know, Christopher, I think also another factor in the question that Rick asked is that we have only people of the same nation on the team, and that wasn't the case before.
Absolutely. Although, you know, to toot our collective horn, I don't think that's going to be a problem. But the design point is really fascinating. And I'll just quickly mention for our listeners, thanks to our friends at the America's Cup, we have some pretty cool, unique photos that are available right now. If you go to Karen's site at sailsporttalk.com and click on the program link for today, you will see a link to an album. And we have photos of all the new boats, including a very cool video on sort of how these new foiling boats fly. And I think the big shocker, Rick, this week was the British boat, which looked completely different than their first-gen boat and has a design feature that no one has seen on these boats yet, which is almost a mini keel running the length of the boat. And everyone is wondering, as we mentioned on previous shows with you, Rick, these boats are really more airplanes now than they are boats. So everyone's trying to make them as aerodynamic, as clean. Most of the design differences we're seeing from the first gen to second gen are in the nose, which you would expect because that's where the aerodynamics start. But the British have really gone off on a flyer. And it kind of makes you wonder, is someone going to be really right and someone going to be really wrong on this? Because they have definitely, pardon the pun, tacked away from the rest of the fleet on this. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I like gone off on a flyer, a little double entendre there, trying to get those ships airborne off the surface of the water. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a little break. And if people would like to call in on the Piano Finders telephone line, that is 800-878-PLAY. More about the America's Cup with Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.
This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk. Let me share with you a conversation with Wendy Tuck, who was the first female skipper to win the Clipper Round the World race. You will remember Wendy as captain of the Maiden last year. I interviewed her on the boat while it was underway in the San Francisco Bay. It is great to hear what Wendy is doing now in Australia during the pandemic.
Tell me about this race.
Yeah, we've just got to try and find some sponsorship and some funding. So we're planning on doing the Sydney Hobart race, which I've done 13 already. But this year's the first time they're going to have a two-handed division, so just two people sailing on the boat. So I've signed up with a friend of mine. His dad's letting us use his boat, but we've just got to – it's never been sailed offshore before, so we've got to spend a fair bit of money getting the boat ready to go, you know, tackle one of the hardest races there is on the planet. So, but, you know, that's what we're working on at the moment, so we're pretty excited.
Have you done much double-handing yet?
I've done lots of two-handed deliveries, so, you know, taking boats from A to B with just two people, but not racing. So it's going to be new for both of us to race two-handed, which is exciting. So my partner in crime, he's an old friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine for 20 years, and we're just, you know, just a flippant conversation saying, hey, I'd love to do it in a two-handed. And he's like, yeah, me too. And then Dad said, well, use my boat. So it's going to be new for both of us.
Yeah, that's kind of how it often starts, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And oftentimes after a few drinks, too.
Yeah, I think there might have been a few wines after. It was after racing on a Sunday here, so there was probably already a few beers and wines, I think. That's always the way. Good have plans never changed? Come over a salad, do they?
What is the name of your friend that you're going to be doing the double hand sailing with?
His name's Campbell Jeeves.
What is it that you look for in a partner for sailing for the Sydney to Hobart?
Knowing and trusting the person. Him and I have done a lot of sailing together in the past because we've known each other for a long time. So knowing that when I'm asleep, he's not going to, you know, do anything silly or crazy. And he trusts me, and that's very important from him as well. And we get on. We get on really well. You know, we're going to be spending a lot of time, just the two of us together. So we do get on very well, and we have the same sort of personality and sense of humour, which makes a big difference. So, and he's a really good sailor. So, and he's younger than me, so he can run around doing all the hard work on the boat. So, yeah, so I think we'll be a good match because we do have that friendship as a base to start off with. So I think that'll make it a lot easier.
That's huge. Do you have a website or anything that you've set up for that?
Yeah, we're still working on it, but we do have a website up. It's just wendytuck.com.au. So that's how you can get in contact us through there. We've already got one sponsor for our clothing, so we're going to look good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but we're just still building the website. It's up and running, and you can contact me through that. And we've also got Wendy Tuck Ocean Racing Instagram, where we'll be starting to post stuff up when we go sailing now. So it's all going to start ramping up in the next few weeks quite big.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to Tittleating Sports with your humble host, yours truly, Rook Tittle. And we have another segment of SailSportTalk.com with my co-host, Karen Lyle. and our friend Christopher Kane, who is in studio in San Francisco. And once again, Piano Finders, call in line 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 7529. Christopher, I always wondered when I think about, you know, you're an experienced sailor and I'm not. If they threw you onto one of these America's boats and they gave you a job, would you be able to do that? Or would it be like trying to hit big league pitching? It's like way over your head. What is that talent level and the discipline like?
Yeah, the talent level is pretty dramatically different. And it's not just the fact that these are, you know, world-class sailors, and by no means do I consider myself that, but also they're sailing on a fundamentally different type of boat. So Karen and I, you know, grew up and sail in the old traditional monohulls. And it's not just that they're dramatically better. They're doing a type of sailing that we're not familiar with. It's almost if you remember how well it went when Michael Jordan went from one sport to another. And that's sort of the same thing. You could be an incredible monohull sailor, get on one of these AC-75s and have no idea how to optimize that boat. They really are dramatically different. And that's what's impressive. You have some of these sailors who have been in several America's Cup races and at this point are racing on their third different class of boat in three consecutive America's Cups. And to be that nimble and be able to just step onto any kind of boat and make it fast, it's pretty rare. I remember having this conversation with Jimmy Spittle here in San Francisco, who was the skipper for the Oracle boat in San Francisco. And you know, some sailors just have that ability to just step onto any boat and instantly make it faster. And, you know, I don't think you can be taught that. You either have it or you don't. And that's why, you know, a lot of times people are wondering, why are we seeing Dean Barker again when he lost in San Francisco? You know, why are we seeing the same sailors over and over again? It's a pretty rare breed that can be flexible enough to get onto any kind of boat and instantly make it fast.
It's really about the team and the design. You can't really sail one of these boats just as one person. It takes a whole team to know it. I really love the video that we posted on the SailSportTalk.com website, where you go to the link and see the QRC code. It describes how the AC-75 boats fly on the water, and they're really more like airplanes than a sailboat, it seems. I mean, the foils have flaps coming off of them in order to change the lift, and the rudder has a flap that changes the pitch. I mean, these boats are really complicated.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny, you're right. I think the designers are faced with a really unique challenge, which is how do you make a boat, a vessel that travels through two types of environment. You have to take into account the fluid dynamics of the foils in the water as well as the aerodynamics of the boat in the air. It's a very complex calculus that they're having to do, and I think that's why maybe in these Gen 2 boats you're seeing some pretty significant differences of opinion is people are really starting to crunch the numbers in both environments and are trying to figure out how you fit these two things together to make the fastest AC-75. And again, just so our listeners know, Karen is referring to SailSportTalk.com. If you go there and click on the link to the album, we've got some latest photos from our friends at the America's Cup, and you'll see the differences in these boats. And it's starting to become pretty dramatic. The one boat we don't have is the Italian boat, which just splashed yesterday. And I will admit they have me a little concerned because the boat is not that much different than the Gen 1 boat. And their explanation was, we feel like we kind of nailed it on the Gen 1 boat. And as we've been saying during this whole show, these are brand new boats that no one has designed before, that have no background. And I find it concerning that the Italian syndicate feels like they nailed it on the first boat coming out of the gate.
Christopher, what would you say are some of the challenges of covering this on television and some of the improvements they've made over the years? And then maybe if you have a suggestion about like how you would do it if you were going to produce the television coverage.
Yeah, the coverage has gotten really good. And I think, you know, Stan Hutty, who built most of what we use now for sailing on broadcast, the metrics and the virtual lines on the course were created by Stan Hutty for the San Francisco America's Cup. And I think those have made it dramatically easier. But, you know, there's two problems with sailing as a viewable sport. One, the boats are almost never pointed at where they're going. And that can be difficult for people to understand when you see a race car driving down, you know, the back stretch of Daytona. It's pretty obvious which car is in first place and which car is in second. Sailboats will diverge. They sail at an angle to the wind, so never pointing directly at the turning mark. And that can be a little difficult to understand. The other thing is it's hard to understand that sometimes the boats are sailing more against each other than they are against the course. So starts are very interesting for people because there are times during the start, which for sailing, the start actually starts before the start, just to make it more complicated for people who don't understand sailing. And at times during the pre-start, you'll actually see the boats sailing away from the starting line because they're more busy trying to set up the other boat than they are where the line is at that point in time. So once you sort of spatially understand what's going on in sailing, it's very engaging and very intriguing. And there are moments of just complete terror and concern when the boats are crossing and they're coming close to each other and which boat's going to be in front, not sure. Is someone going to have to turn at the last second to avoid a collision? And then what I've always loved about sailing is sailing is the only sport in the world where the playing field is constantly changing. You can sail upwind in San Francisco Bay, turn around, come back down, and the next time you go upwind on the same course, the wind has changed. The tides have changed. It's never the same course twice. And that's a hard thing to project to a television audience, how the water and the wind are changing in real time and how that affects the other boats. And to your question, Rick, if there's anything I would add, I think they've done a pretty good job in the last couple of America's Cup kind of nailing, understanding where the boats are on the course, where they're supposed to be going, and how they relate to each other. They've done a pretty good job figuring that out. I think the missing piece for me is to explain how Mother Nature is screwing around with things at the same time.
You know, also the teams are more mysterious to each other, as well as, you know, than they are in, say, the CLGP, where all of the statistics are shared across all the teams and the boat designs are all the same. So there's more of a mystery to be unraveled, a sleuth game, as it were, to find out what the competition is doing to really understand how not only to sail this complex vessel, but how to sail against the other teams. Do you think that's something that creates more excitement than everybody knowing what's happened? How do you feel about that, Christopher?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, first off, the CLGP is a one design class, so everybody has the same boat. So you have a baseline there that makes that sharing of data a lot more easy and accessible. With the America's Cup, where the design of your boat is, you know, practically a state secret, that's a lot harder to do. But on the other hand, I think there's a downside to that, which is we've seen America's Cups where the weird way the America's Cup is set up is the defender, in this case New Zealand, is already in the finals. And all the other syndicates, all the other teams are defenders, are challengers. So they have to all fight amongst each other. It'd be as if the NFL season starts and Kansas City is already in the Super Bowl because they won last year. So you never actually get to see a challenger racing a defender until the actual America's Cup. That's the first time those two boats are going to war on the same patch of water against each other. And the downside to all this mystery is sometimes you wind up with America's Cups where the two boats are really not equal, where one boat is dramatically better, but you never really find out about that until the main event. And then it kind of becomes a bit of a disappointment because one boat just steamrolls the other one. So, I mean, that's the downside to, you know, keeping all this data. It makes it more intriguing, but there is the possibility of kind of a disappointing final America's Cup.
And how you mentioned about the fact that boats, as they're tacking, can cross in front of each other. How often do we have a collision? And are there, you know, like safety people that are peripheral if people go on the drink, or they try to keep that free and clear of any other craft?
Well, yeah, they do clear out the box, which is what the race course and the boundaries are called. So in San Francisco, because, of course, we're a very active waterfront, it was kind of like Brigadoon. They would build the course every morning
sail the America's Cup and literally take down the course every night. And then the next morning they would build it up again. So, yes, there is a box where civilian boat traffic is blocked out. Sailors do go overboard and, you know, their teams have to go fish them out. In terms of safety and collisions, you know, there are rules in sailing about which boat has the right of way. But there's also rules that are, even if you have the right of way, there's an expectation of safety. That if you have the right of way, but you kind of force a collision to make that right of way be enforced, that actually can be penalized against you. So you can't force the issue that way. You can't intentionally cause a collision for the sake of causing a collision to trigger a penalty. Now, if it happens because in the pre-starts are where you tend to get the most boat contact because the boats are depowered. They're trying to basically box the other boat away from the start line before the clock goes off. So they're very depowered. They're not going very quickly, and they can drift into each other, hit each other very easily. So you'll see the most collisions happening in the pre-start, but the boats aren't moving very quickly, so you won't see a whole lot of damage. At speed, you will never see these boats actually hit each other because, frankly, the boats can't afford it.
All right, we need to wrap it up. And Karen, once again, more information about the QR code and all that?
It's going to be on sailsporttalk.com, and then there is a QRC code that you'll see. Just click on that, and you'll go straight to the photographs and a really awesome video that describes the foiling mechanism and how the boat is like a plane.
And Christopher, any last words from you, my friend?
Oh, I can't wait to see in December what happens with this British boat. I'm just really curious.
All right, we'll see if it's another Titanic or not. You guys, Karen Lyle, Christopher Kane, thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
All right, and remember,
thanks,
go to
Rick. We'll see you next week.
Yes, yeah, SailsportTalk.com. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back. Lines are open at 1-800-878-PLAY.